Hi everyone, my name's Dan Gretrix and I'm a Senior Associate in the Commercial and Projects team here at Shoesmiths.
Hello everyone, my name is Tom Atkin-Willoughby. I'm an Associate in the Commercial and Projects team here at Shoesmiths as well.
Welcome to the ShoePod sessions. The purpose of these sessions is to take listeners through the key components of a commercial contract. And today's topic is side letters. We thought it might be useful to contextualise our discussion today, so please meet Jerry. Jerry's a fictional character created for the purpose of this podcast. We'll be helping Jerry out with an uncommon amount of side letters he's had to use in his business dealings. So Tom, how about we start with the basics? Can you give us an idea of what we mean when we talk about side letters?
The expression side letter is not a technical term or one which is judicially recognised as having a consistent meaning. The term is normally used to refer to a document that is ancillary to another contract. So a side letter may supplement and form part of the main contract. However, a side letter can also be separate but complementary to contract in its own right, capable of giving rise to enforceable rights and liabilities. Importantly, the principles of contract law apply to side letters in the same way that they do with other agreements. So Dan, do you want to run us through some uses of side letters that Jerry may have had?
Some of the reasons that Jerry might have used a side letter in his dealings are to clarify some of the provisions of the main contract that Jerry's entered into. So often it might be the case that a contract's been entered into and they might have been rushed or they might have been subject to legal review after signature. And rather than amending the contract, they just have a standalone letter that says, by the way, when we say this, this is what the parties actually mean. For example, Jerry might have a contract with an agency for consultancy services, which stipulates that the consultancy firm will use all reasonable endeavours to procure a result. That term is standard and well known within the legal industry, but parties may wish to use a side letter in this instance to elaborate on what this obligation means in practice, i.e. what steps. There might have been a disagreement before, so the parties just wish to have a side letter to clarify what they actually mean going forward to avoid disagreement and, dare I say, getting the lawyers involved in terms of deciphering what it actually means legally. Another example might be to vary the terms of a contract without having to draft a more formal deed of variation. So in this instance, Jerry was actually more comfortable to use a side letter as the statute of limitation period for actions brought under a simple contract is 6 years from the date on which the cause of action accrued. But under deeds, so a formal deed of variation, it would be 12 years. Now, that might be imposing additional obligations. It might be varying the services. Side letters are often quite commonly used for some of the more commercial things. So variations, ideally what you'd do is have a really clear position where you're saying what clauses you're varying so that you can almost read the two documents together to arrive at a consolidated position. With a side letter, you might say, well, okay, from year three onwards, the fees are going to be this and actually we'll agree some kind of rebate or discount structure. Commercially, parties may want to just have that sit separately. But we'll come on shortly to why that might cause some issues. Finally, it may be that Jerry's used a side letter to facilitate completion of a transaction with some last-minute changes. Back in the days, I say, of kind of manual contracts, we use DocuSign quite frequently now, or Adobe Sign, things like that. Often you'd have a transaction that's coming up for completion and all of a sudden the pen comes out with manuscript amendments and initials. That may not always be suitable to do, and sometimes because of the urgency, parties will just sign the contract as is in the knowledge that a side letter will shortly follow to clarify what changes they've agreed or make those tiny last minute changes. Again, there are risks involved with that, so we wouldn't necessarily advise that that is the best method. I'll just give one more example, and this is around you might want to use a side letter to keep information confidential. Sometimes the primary document may need to be uploaded to a platform or otherwise disclosed publicly, and the variation or the formal variation would typically have the same effect. But side letters may sit outside of that. So parties may want to, again, I go back to that kind of rebate piece. Some parties may have side letters with their supply chain in terms of the rebates based on volume purchases, for example. So, Tom, I kind of alluded to there that there's some potential problems that Jerry might run into when using a side letter. Can you take us through some of those?
So, yeah, side letters can often pose legal challenges, as Dan alluded to, and often they raise questions around their enforceability, their interpretation, and their relationship with the main contract, which they are a side letter to.
With that in mind, how would you make a side letter binding?
So to be legally binding and enforceable, in this instance, Jerry, with the side letter that he's been, the side letters he's been using, must satisfy the same requirements of contract formation as any other contract. So those standard requirements are offer and acceptance, intentions create legal relations, certainty of terms, and consideration. And importantly, the court may look at the language and the surrounding circumstances of the side letter to determine its legal effect, and may also consider the impact of an entire agreements clause in the main contract, as often the effect of an entire agreements clause may exclude or limit the effect of the side letter altogether. So practically, Dan, how might Jerry, when drafting side letters, ensure that these conditions are satisfied?
I've got a few tips that Jerry could use in the future when sorting these side letters. First one is by stating clearly whether the side letter as a whole is intended to be binding or not. You do that by including an express statement to that effect, by cross-referring the side letter to the main agreement to support the presumption that the parties intend the side letter to be legally binding. That kind of goes back to contract law 101 in terms of parties' intentions to create legal relations, or by including boilerplate provisions. So having things like governing law, jurisdiction, third-party right clauses, assignment, those kind of common boilerplate provisions that we've covered as part of these ShoePod sessions will, again, lend weight to the fact that this isn't just a back of a fag packet type thing. This is intended to be a seriously considered document. Another one would be to actually separately call out within the side letter the parts that are binding and aren't binding. We often see that similarly in MOUs or Memorandum of Understanding or indeed Letters of Intent, where the party's intentions might be called out to be non-binding, but actually kind of core obligations around confidentiality, or it might be core things around pricing, are intended to be binding and would be relied upon by either party in the event of a dispute. And then there's a few other things, really. So consideration is a critical one. And again, that goes back to that contract law 101 piece in terms of what constitutes a binding contract. If you're not sure, or if Jerry's not sure that there is valid consideration, then sometimes what Jerry could do is include within the side letter the use of £1 being given to the other party as consideration. I'd usually say that you could consider drafting the side letter as a deed or the document as a deed, but that kind of runs contrary to the purpose of using a side letter rather than formally varying the document. So in those circumstances, it may be that you just go down a formal variation route. And then there's other kind of formulaic pieces, if you like. So Jerry should definitely follow a clear and consistent form of side letter. A side letter doesn't need to be in any particular format and may even be set out in an exchange of emails, although that would be unusual and kind of difficult to enforce. But having a clear and consistent form that he uses on an ongoing basis with those other elements that I've spoken about would definitely lend weight to the party's intention for it to be binding, if indeed that is what he's seeking to achieve. So, Tom, unless there's anything else, I think that pretty much brings us to a close. I guess the only thing that I'd add at the end of this is Tom and I are both commercial contracts lawyers, and as commercial contract lawyers, we are very much focused on parties having certainty over what their contract consists of. Unless there's a clear reason why a side letter should be used, we'd ordinarily say go down the variation route, because then it's clear for third parties who are coming at it Let's say the people dealing with the contract originally leave the business. A variation agreement that sits along the main agreement, clearly numbered if there are multiple variation agreements, makes our jobs much easier in the event of a dispute, and certainly makes our litigation colleagues' jobs easier in the event of a dispute, rather than needing to decipher the different documents that may or may not be in play.
I guess that just leaves me to add that thank you everyone for listening to this instalment of our ShoePod series.